Do you remember the definition of faith that we use? Faith is the ability to put your foot down where nothing is, and in the act of putting it down, posit something to put it on. Do you accept our definition of faith?
Yes.
Why do we make this statement? I'm going to open one of the I had a sumptuous gift of 12 plus pens of different colours. Is that right?
At the moment.
I'm just testing. Can you see that red? Can you see that red? Can you see that red? Well, the one you can't see was in my mind, wasn't it? Did I put it there, or did I pretend? Can you see that one? That one I didn't touch the film. Right. Now, imagine that this sheet of cello represents pre-creational intelligent power. It is infinitely extended intelligent power. We can call it SP, sentient power, infinitely extended, not yet having contracted. Contracted means contracted, acted against itself. It is infinite. The moon, the red and the blue appears. The red symbolizes energy active and the blue energy intellective. The intellective is inhibited. It finites. Now imagine between the red and the blue there is that which can appear as either an infinitely extended sentient power not yet having manifest either as power or as form. Form is intellective. Power is volitional. Now, from within itself, it posits. I am thinking of a point there which I will put, but I have not yet put it. Now, potential means power held. Power held. That's another way of saying power inhibited. Power tends to posit. If you inhibit your tendency to posit, that's like you inhibiting your tendency to propound a problem. You have to work very hard to inhibit a tendency to posit something. Why? Because when there is nothing whatever there, other than infinite sentient power, there is an opportunity not being used. Imagine prior to creation there is an infinity of sentient power not in use. Alright? Right. Now I have in my mind an idea of a point. Have you all got an idea of a point in your mind? And if not, will you put one there? How do you do it? Imagination. The word imagination is the noun form of a power I make, imag. I, the observer, can actually focus. Focus means force strike. Focus. Force strike. Now, somewhere around there, I have decided to put a point. Will you agree with me that that is a sufficient place to put it? We can put it there, or there, or there, or anywhere, whatever. I can put it in midair. But in midair, it doesn't leave a mark on the cellophane. I'm going to put it on the cellophane, but prior to going on the cellophane, it is in my mind. It is in your mind too. And we agree that I will be your servant in positing this point on here. Now imagine that whatever is can never cease to be, and whatever is not can never come to be. And that means that whatever we are as spiritual monads, as prime units of initiative power, that is spirit, spirit means initiative, we can all agree to make a point. And when you give me the instruction, tell me to make a point, and I will accept the instruction for you and make the point. Shall I make a point? Right. Here is the point. I hope it's good enough for you. There is a point. The red point, symbolizing energy positing itself from within itself, because we are only instruments of the sentient power of infinity, which we call God. God is a shorthand word for infinite sentient power. And it has made, with myself as the servant of you, as a multitudinous group of sentient powers, there a point. Now, there was no point there. Then there was a point in our mind. Out of all the things we posited, we could have posited not a point, but a line, or a plane, or a cube, a triangle, a square, anything. But we chose a point. Why? Because the point is most economic. Point is po in t. That means power in crucifixion. Because when power posits itself and fixates itself, power is self-crucified. This is the mystery of the crucifixion of all witnesses to truth. To witness to truth is to pin oneself, to nail, fixate, crucify oneself in the image, in the mind, posited on the cellophane. Now it was not there, and now it is there. Where there was no point, we posited the point in the mind and then sent a message down this arm to the pen to make the point. The point now exists. Exists means stands out. Before it was hidden. Now it is standing out visibly from the background. That is a primary point. The phonetic for that primary point is K-T-R. K is a lock, T is the crossing of the forces that make it. Why? Because I have to say to the right, to the left, above, below, coordinates to fixate the point. So there are crossing forces locked. T, K, K, T. But the moment I posit that point, the letter R, which is a vibration, and which means, as in Roch, spirit, differentiation. The moment the point is there, we differentiate the place where the point is from the rest of the cellophane where it is not. So where nothing was, we have posited something on which we can put our foot. Foot itself means power, fixated. It's the same word as put, etymologically, and the same as the part in pater, father. The power that posits that point is called father. The power that posits the point is called father. The point that is posited is a form and is called the son. In both spellings, it is the father appearing on a stage lower, that is, in manifestation. It is also an illuminator of consciousness because it makes clear for us the meaning of that word we have chosen to call point. So we now have a point where there was no point. Now, we have to think the totality of the whole manifest universe is built of points. Science calls it energy quanta. Little amounts of energy. But each little amount is a point. And the universe is nothing but powers posited. Little quantities of energy posited by acts of primary sentient power. And there we are. If we were to cover this with dots and then connect the dots up with lines, we could draw all conceivable forms of universal manifestation. Now, are we clear about that? Now, the word faith and the word foot and put and part in pater means faith. Faith is putting power. Where nothing is, you preconceive and then put. You place, that is P, and you nail or fixate or cross, that is T. P for the positing power, T for the nailing, fixation power. So there is the P, the point, and I've drawn now the cross, the coordinates that help to locate it. Now, when this point is posited, is it not true that to posit it, we have to take in the infinity of our mental possibilities the idea of point out of all possibilities and select point to put it there? Therefore, all around here there are an infinity of other things that we might have put instead of point. We might have had triangle, square, so on. We might have had compasses. We might have had square in that sense. And we could cover all the space with all conceivable forms. But we didn't do that. That's relatively waterproof. Somebody's going to clean it later with something, I suppose. If not, I will do it personally. Now, throughout the whole of infinite space, there is sentient power. There is no absolute voidity. There is nowhere where there is not sentient power. And it is that sentient power, by self-focus, self-striking of its own power, that posits form. And whatever form it posits, clearly, it has excluded all alternative forms that it might have posited. So we inhibit, we hold in potential all the other forms that would cause us not to be able to see the point. So every act of clear vision is necessarily an act of inhibition of all the other things that we might clearly have put instead. And when we put all the things that are possible to put, for us as finite physical beings, it takes infinite time. So we won't bother to do it. But if we did, we could cover this and then buy a bigger sheet and cover that and so on with alternative forms. And when we have covered them all together, so that every point contains every other point, so that within that little point there is a square and a circle and a triangle and so on, that point is the very principle of all forms, whatever. And therefore, we have to say, if we cover the whole sheet with total possibilities, then we need a term to express the totality of all the mutually inhibiting forms. The name for that is chaos. Now, chaos is not rubbish, it's not total disorder. It is the simultaneous co-presentation of all conceivable orders. So out of chaos we can draw order. Are you with us, Peter?
Yeah, I was thinking about the screen motion between point to point. As you said, the most economical way is to say, place a point and say we move from point to point, and therefore we can create triangles, squares, or whatever.
Yes.
Now, what happens, well, what is happening when you are particularizing the shape? And when you are chaotic, when you are going from point to point indiscriminately, and or working in a geometric pattern with order in your life, what is the?
Do you mean how do you do it?
Is there a law that governs it?
The law is that which you posit. Law is from the same verb as to lay. A law is what is laid down as a pattern for action. No. Chaos is the term we reserve for the totality of all conceivables presented simultaneously.
Mass black.
Or in this case, mass red. Or whatever colour arbitrarily we care to posit. In color symbology, in Kabbalah, and so on, in all the great religious works, there is a very full color symbology, and you take mass white for ultimate enlightenment, mass black for ultimate wickedness, the opposite to mass enlightenment, mass blue for intellectuality, mass green for hope, and so on. There's a colour symbology in all major religions. In the church they would use different vestments for different times of the year, different altar cloths for different times of the year, and so on, all according to colour symbology. Now, let's just write the word colour for a moment. That's the same word with the same origin as the word for a tube in your stomach called colon. Yeah? If we add an R to it, which means to differentiate, then we have the fundamental concept of the prism. A primordial mass of white, when pushed through impedances, becomes rainbow. Colour appears through impeding original white light. Right? Now we, as human beings, have a gift from our source to be able to think, to be able to reason, to be intellectual, to employ verbal symbols to aid our thought. And we talk about coloration as emotive stress. We talk about a colored image, meaning emotionally charged, don't we? Highly colored conversation, and so on. The call, then, notice, you can put a K there, it's quite legitimate. In fact, in some languages, it's spelled color with a K. In English, you can use either S or K sound for the letter written C. Now, if you reverse that, read it, Eureka, it is lock. The other way it's Eureka too, as in call, Nide. But this way it is lock, because your food tube is a lock, like a canal, for a throughput of experiences to be differentiated. When you eat, you are supposed to chew, to break down the food, to differentiate it, to discriminate its parts, and then to assimilate to different organs the particular chemistry needed by each organ. And that is a colour phenomenon. Now, the subject matter you gave me the idea for when you were explaining the problem of faith, I will now bring into consciousness, it is this. Hindu religion is concerned more with eternity than with time. Similarly with other Oriental religions generally. But three religions came out of the Arabian desert from the same source. And they are not concerned so much with eternity as the end process, the omega, the big O, the final goal, as the historical process of getting there. So we say Judaism, Christianity, Islam are three historical religions. They are concerned with the march of time, evolution and development in a way that Hindu religion is not. Far Eastern religion is more concerned with the repetition of eternity. Now you remember, eternity we translate He Trinity. Now the letter E, fifth letter, the He of the Hebrew, the letter E means itself life. Life Trinity is the translation eternity. The Trinity is power, form, function. A threefold activity of sentient power, not serially presented, but presented simultaneously. In time, we see things sequentially, serially, one after the other. And in that seeing, we abstract each thing that we see from its context of primordial chaos, that is, from eternity. Eternity is all presented simultaneously. Time is the same, presented sequentially, serially, bit by bit. Right. Now, why did these three religions stress historicity? If we take the Hindu idea of an eternal recurrence of manifestation, rest, manifestation, rest, manifestation, rest, a period of creation, a period of rest, another period of creation, another of rest. Now, as taught, this can have a very peculiar effect on the human psyche. it can actually produce colossal boredom. And by about the 6th century BC, there was a terrific revolt. And prior to the Christian dispensation, this boredom had got to such a pitch that the rulers of the world were really getting fed up with the idea of an eternal recurrence of identical events. Nietzsche borrowed the idea and brought it up to date in the last century under the term of the eternal recurrence, in which you do everything that you've done before again. Everything whatever that we could possibly do has been done an infinite number of times before and will be done an infinite number of times again. No, I would say it was locking itself up in a repetitive structure called law, rota, tora. The idea of this eternal creation, dissolution, recreation of the same, dissolution, recreation of the same, is a very boring idea. Would you like to come here again forever and repeat your statement at the beginning of this evening? And hear me repeat the same words again and again and again forever. And horribly remember you'd already done it an infinity of times before. Surely with that concept there must arise at some point a revolt. Something must say, I dislike intensely this repetition. And I want to make everything new. So there in the Bible is a statement, behold, I make all things new. Just when you thought everything was going to be repeated, I've changed it. New rules, new heaven, that means new ideas. A new earth, that means new applications. And which would you rather have, eternal boredom or eternal creative production of newnesses? Or are you afraid of being bored by the eternal newnesses? Now, these historical religions all tell that there is an ultimate term to the evolutionary process. That we're not going to repeat exactly. We're moving from a state of relative unconsciousness to a state of total consciousness and complete individual self-determination. The cosmic law is not going to rule us. We are going to discover the law, to uncover its tricks, to assimilate it, and then to recreate our own being from this knowledge and understanding. Now these three religions teach that there is a process going on in man. The man is in a kind of test situation on earth, and in it he can choose and will choose, and in the act of choosing he will create for himself a new character. This is called a new birth. To do this, there must be a change of mind, a metanoia. There must be a total change of outlook. One suddenly recognizes one has repeated too often one's silly responses to environmental stimuli with other people and with situations. And one is determined now to make a new response in a totally new way to a situation that could remain the same if we did not change it. I am Alpha and Omega. I am the original divine voice. Alpha means divine voice. It is God speaking. Prior to creation, it is Alpha. Creation begins when the letter Beta, or Beta, B begins. B originally is drawn as a circle. When that circle appears, that is the beginning of formal manifestation. Prior to that, there is an A. I will draw an A. I imagine that that A actually is a convenient shorthand form. Otherwise, I would have to extend that like that, like that, and like that, and like that, and like that, to infinity. Now, you see, if I do that, what have I got? I've got a triangle there. Yeah? In that triangle, I'm going to write power, form, action. power, form, action. And this triangle is a precipitate inwardly of the infinite sentient power produced by these coordinates. It is the Father, the Pater, the Filius, the Son, and the activation for the Holy Spirit at work. And that triangle has been produced by coordination lines of infinite length. And I'm going to draw the triangle again without those lines to remind us. When they have the triangle up in the Vatican, it is to remind them to think at all times in terms of power, form, function. In every situation, in life, in business, in politics, in art, in human relations, it's always a problem of a definite amount of power in a definite formulation and a definite activation of that formulated power. If we handle the PFA of the situation, then we have got exactly the beautiful act, the true act of living. But if we don't balance those three, we are in trouble. If we have more power than form, we're leaking. If we have more form than power, we are rigid. If we have activity with no power and no form, we have slush. So PFA must be balanced for the perfect act. Now, this perfect act cannot come immediately. Spirit always acts indirectly. If spirit were to posit immediately itself, it would posit the same that it was before creation. Can you see that? Let's go back a bit. Before creation, the point was not there. But what was there was eternal, infinite spirit. Sentient power, initiative was there. And he had not yet initiated, but could do, anything whatever. But if it were to initiate its self-appearance, simultaneously, it would reposit itself like the empty piece of cellophane. The Godhead would be the Godhead again, and the Godhead, and the Godhead. And there would be no God as Father, God as Son, issuance of Father power, God as Holy Spirit, activating power, form, but everything that reposits itself as light, infinite. Imagine an infinite light with no form in it, positing itself in its fullness of light. What's it posited? Answer, no change. It has not manifested itself. Manifest means counted, individually, fastened, made fast in order to be evaluated, manifest. Right? So, spirit, if it were to act directly, would only posit infinity again. And there would be no manifestation, no world that we know. There'd be no manifestation of separative power, form, function, but just simultaneously infinity, 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 with an absolute blast of light. That light in Kabbalah is called nothing. It's called Ayn. It's called the invisible, never presented observer. Well, then it's not telling us anything, is it? But it could do. But it can only manifest at the expense of creation. And creation is arcing. Remember, created from that base, K-R-A, Kra. Read Hebraica, arc. And the arc is nothing but the circle. Creation is arcing. The moment it creates, it's finite. It makes a zone of finitude. And that finitude is manifest, can be counted. There's one, and here's another for you. And there's a little one inside there. And there's another inside there. Right? The great drawing of God with the compasses. Yes, simply a circle excludes infinity and includes finitude. Right, so now we have to say, what is the purpose of the historical presentation of this infinite power which could present itself wholly itself, repeatedly, eternally. But if it did, it would be no change. It would be infinite, intelligent, light power, publishing itself as infinite, intelligent, light power, without any finiting process. No change. Now, no finite being would then exist. There would be no education. There would be no understanding. There would be no creatures to understand. But the moment we make that arc, we make a circle, we make it finite. Now we'll draw a touch circle again. Now that is the word on, as a primitive glyph. I'll write it as O, N. But really the letter N itself means to negate continuously. Out of all conceivable powers and applications, N says no to the infinite. And in saying no to infinity, it says yes to finity. Now we've got a zone there, a circle, and that is a drawing, that's the Ouroboros, serpent with tail in mouth, very primitive symbol of God, a self-stimulating, self-precipitating intelligent power. There it is. Now, once it has put its tail in its mouth, it has excluded, that's out there, and included sentient power. That outside is expanded, and this inside is inspanded. When you stretch your hand, that's called a span. And it means a motion of primordial life power. Within this circle here, now, there are possibilities of further pulsatings. So we go in to the center and out again. And we can do this repeatedly until we fill the whole of this space. But we leave the middle there empty because the power cannot stop moving. It can move towards the center and then out, but it can't go to dead center and stop. So it draws this shape here. And it keeps on doing this in cycles of inner perience. Experience would be outside. Inperience is self-examination of the sentient power enclosed in this circle. Now each one of us is such a circle. Each one of us is fittingly diagrammed in this way. In the very middle there, I'm going to write IS, which means yes. I'll draw it a bit bigger for you. In the middle is IS. That's the sense of I, subject. I, the knower. Outside here, spinning round it like this, is the issuance of the I initiates, and what comes out there is seen as object. So the whole of this zone here, we call the action zone, and it cannot go into the dead center. But it is subjected to the orders from center, and if there be two such beings, touching continually, like that, they can interfere with each other and stop each other's focus on center. So that if the intelligent center of this being goes out to look at the other being, it can become conditioned by the stimulus received from the other being and then forget its own center and fall into external identification with the received stimulus. And that is called the fall. The idea of the fall in all religions is the idea of being fixated on the periphery of being to the point of forgetting one's centrality of initiative.
The fact that you fall onto that other center, does that mean that is a more powerful polarity?
No. It means you have become interested in the external stimulus. And you don't fall onto the center of the other being, you fall onto your own periphery. Yes. Now that peripheralization of awareness results in identification with the external world, called the material world, and the fascinating, that is, binding of consciousness to the external stimulus situation, so that you're tied up, not by the other being, but by your own interest in the stimulus. The fall is really a downgoing of an interested power, identifying with the stimulus rather than going to its own center, which is creative. The whole meaning of the fall in religion is abandoning one's center of initiative and peripheralizing one's awareness by becoming interested more in what another being is expressing than what you might creatively express. Now, every time we examine a thing, we go around it and we bring back the stimulus energy to center to examine it. But we're not very good at it, really. We don't pay full attention. Supposing somebody generously gives you a new Rolls Royce, and you pat it and stroke it and lift the bonnet up and measure the tires and the tread and count the cylinders and so on, usually you get tired after a bit and have to go to bed for a rest. You cannot exhaust the full interest of any single thing given to you, no matter how small, because everything is precipitated by the infinite, and the most finite, the most small thing we have has an infinity of implications in it, and we haven't time to exhaust it. So what we do is we go round, go back, think about it, and fall asleep. And then we wake up again and go out and we examine something else. And we never really exhaust the significance of any single experience, whether it's a relatively simple experience like buying a bun or getting married. You tend not to exhaust before you pass on to your next experience. Now, supposing we said, let's simplify it a bit further. We make a circle like that. That circle has come from the infinite and made the number six. It's come from infinity, eternity, into time. It then goes further, investigates the circle, goes out and investigates another circle, goes out, like some fellow goes to the theater, comes out, goes, has a drink, comes out, goes home, has a sleep, comes out, goes to business in the morning. Now, how many of us actually sit down and try to coordinate these activities? How many of us actually say, I've been to the theater tonight? What is the exact correspondence in that and going to the American bar in the Midlands? What is the exact correspondence with that in all its elements, all its parts, with being married, with going to business? Do we put everything into correspondence? Do we? Do we actually? Is this a new idea? Or is it an idea we've had and never accomplished? It's a very old yogic exercise. When you go to bed at night, remember the whole of your day backwards, starting in bed and thinking backwards right through the day. Most of the people I know that have tried it have fallen asleep and not known at what point they fell asleep or how far they got through their day.
When you do that exercise, do you in fact go backwards in time, step by step, even if you walk backwards? Or do you move backwards to an instant and then move forward and then move back again and move forward? Back again and move forward? Or continue to back?
When we said that time is a linear, sequential, serial presentation of the contents of eternity. But eternity is not time. Now, when you go into a deep dreamless sleep, you go into eternity. And that's why you can't remember it in time afterwards, because the mode of consciousness called temporal is linear, and the mode of awareness eternal is not linear. But between the waking temporal state, where you think you're conscious of what you're doing, and the state of deep sleep where you're actually eternally, infinitely aware, you have a mediating state called dreaming. Now in dreaming you can go in any direction whatever. forwards, backwards, upside, downside, inside, outside, and generally at random.
So is it in that twilight state?
Yes.
You can bring in that non-serial approach to implement
the measuring thing? Yes. The twilight state, two lights, where sunset or dawn is easier to practice that exercise than at any other time. By practice, you can actually make yourself start to dream and remain awake. And you can then examine the contents of eternity in time. If you have the power to remember what it is you're looking for. And that requires tremendous practice. Now, every time we go round, we assimilate a bit of an experience and then come out to another experience. So in fact, we do not exhaust any particular one. And so we have to keep going round like this. And we always get a gap, no matter how often we go round like this. Extroverting attention, introverting, extroverting, introverting, extroverting, introverting, and so on. You see, gradually we're filling up this space with the lines, the world lines of our investigation. But we've always got some more that we can go into here. We can gradually reduce the area between like this as we go. And until we have exhausted all conceivable possibilities of our own self-investigation, it is not called the consummation of days. And it is not yet the last judgment. Every time you go out, there is a judgment. When you come back, there is a judgment. When you go out, you judge the world, the lamps, the ceiling, the floor. When you come in, you judge your mental state and response to it. Outside are events. Inside are states of feeling, of emotion, of impulse. Until you have filled in the whole space and left nothing whatever unexamined, it is not yet the last judgment for that individual.
So when you go into the environment, you look at and say, the last judgment seems to be a day where we will all be there and we will all be judged on what we've done in our
mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you're judged individually at different times and you're judged eternally and collectively as well. All beings are being evaluated in their experiences while they're undergoing them. And also there is a final judgment which actually preceded your appearance in time. Because remember, your potentiality before you enter birth is there in its totality. Yes. Totally different than the ones you think you've got now. None of the problems which you now think are problems will then be of any interest, because you will have transcended them for higher ones. But the final one is this: I am self-responsible. That's the last judgment. Before that time, you blame everybody else for your condition, for your misfortune. At the last judgment, you blame you.
When Christ
and the prophets, they
know not what they do.
Yes, that's pretty obvious.
He was then taking full responsibility for himself. But at the same time, he said, God, why has
thou forsaken them? We've had this one before. If your memory is any good, we've dealt with this before.
Yeah,
he, in order to be what he was, the firstborn of the dead, the firstborn of many brothers, the leader of human evolution, who attains a state of total last judgment with himself first, and then said, I will now draw you a picture of the last judgment. There's my halo, and here is my body. That's my last judgment. I have a zone of influence, I am active, the vertical, and I am passive to my own activity. That's the horizontal. That's the diagram of us, each one of us. We are a zone of sentient power, positively active, negatively passive to our own positivity. We lay our life down and we pay the price. We make decisions, most of them stupid, and then we have to deal with them. Pure point. Now that symbol is a very, very ancient symbol, long before historical Christianity, but not before cosmic logos. Cosmic logos is that symbol. I am power, I am initiative, I am the recipient of my initiative. That is the meaning of that symbol. That's why that symbol is placed like a wheel behind the heads of saints. A saint is a person who has realized he is S-A-N-T, self-observing, crucified one. A saint is a person that knows he is the cause of his own condition and affirms it and accepts it. Now, at the last judgment for the individual, that can occur in time when a man or a woman suddenly realizes, my God, I am responsible for me. I can't blame anybody. It is my reaction to the stimulus, to the event, to the circumstance. Not the event, but my response is my business. That's the last judgment. But the whole human race also has a cumulative last judgment. And the whole universe of manifestation has a last judgment too. Providing you accepted that you were the cause of your being slow.
Yeah.
Not if you said I was slow because somebody made me slow.
No, if you said that would be hell.
Well, a very nice lady said to me today that she made a bit of a mistake, but it wasn't her fault because the man had told her. But her response was her response. We have to accept total responsibility. Until we do, we have not reached last judgment for us. But when we do, that is the last judgment. We have nobody to blame but ourselves. When we realize this and we stop blaming other people for our condition, we've had the last judgment. After that, we are freely, creatively beings of initiative. We're not inert, we're not dead. Dead means unable to change ourselves. We are able to create ourselves anew every instant. Now, these three religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, are arranged by many thinkers in this way. The Old Testament, so-called, deals with God the Father. The New Testament deals with God the Son. And the Islamic Testament deals with the Holy Ghost. God the Father posits the world. God the Son redeems the world as a whole. And Islam says, and every individual within it has the Holy Spirit within the individual, not just within the collective. So it's in Islam, everybody is equal before God, absolutely. In principle, not necessarily in practice, but in principle, every Muslim is equal to every other Muslim. There are no highs and lows in the eyes of God. Now in some Christian sects, there may be high and low in the hierarchy of the church, but not before God. And Dionysius of Ares Hill said the hierarchy is not the persons of the church, but the order of development of the awareness of the structure of reality. Judaism has said there is a God, there is intelligent power, concerned for the historical evolution and development of the human race, and determined to turn every human being into a God functioning for the God. Christianity says, yes, and I have done the work, says Jesus. It can be done. I have done it. I prove it. I insult the establishment and get crucified. And I don't complain. And I will do it again. And I will come back and do it again. Until everyone knows how to do it. And in those days, none shall teach another of God, for all shall know him, because he is what is inside there. The initiating spirit in the center of every being. Now history is moving towards a condition where the whole human race is being brought into consciousness of their total self-responsibility. I saw a newsreel the other night of a 12-mile long line of corpses in Germany on the road. Living people lying down and saying, this is how we will be when we are dead. We are being treated as not here in the middle of a military exercise. So they took their initiative and they lay down on the road, 12 miles long of them. And that was their initiative. They said, we don't like this nuclear destruction of the human race. That's their verdict. They're making a definite stand. We don't want to destroy everything. But there are other forces on earth that say, we don't mind destroying everybody except us. And we have our shelters. And we're more intelligent than most. So we ought to be saved. Because this final judgment, called Armageddon, that means the judgment of Earth's arms. The testing of the Earth fight, what we call the nuclear holocaust, is nothing but the natural, logical product of the condition of man. The men are not fond of each other. That the human race are not kindly disposed. That they are quite content to be cut into groups, into individuals, into nations, into political parties. And they are quite content to blow the other side up in the name of their own survival. Now, as long as human beings are prepared to blow up other human beings for their own survival, then there's going to be a movement towards the Armageddon, the final test of physical violence on earth. Now that's preceded by a war in heaven. Remember heaven, the uplifted, the heaved up. Heaven is the idea world, the world of your ideas. The battle is a battle of concepts. Say materialistic Marxism believes that you are a machine that can be manipulated, destroyed, brainwashed, sent to Siberia, and so on. It's an idea in the mind of a group of people that all people can be manipulated. Wills can be changed with electric shocks. And there's another thought on earth in some other people, that human beings are fundamentally, internally divine. One part of the world is grossly materialistic and violently disposed, and the other part says no. We are spiritually disposed. And we do not believe that external attack and violence and brainwashing techniques can fundamentally alter our spiritual determination to be free individuals. This is an ideological battle. It is called war in heaven. And the war in heaven precedes the war on earth. You can see that in all the news every day. An ideological statement from two sides of the Iron Curtain. As long as people have this war within their mind, that war will move towards expressing itself in physical activity. Physical violence is merely the external expression of mental violence. And every day you know enough people who go about cursing each other quietly in business and wishing each other no good in daily life. And just mentally. But tighten up the situation a bit and mental becomes emotional and emotional becomes physically active. Now historically we are moving not towards a repetition of an identical situation as manifestation rest. We are moving towards a peak of self-realization, of self-responsibility. Each individual totally self-responsible. And we've been pushed to towards it by cosmic evolutionary power, which we call God. We know we've got to face this situation. We're not going to stop the powers on Earth that prefer physical violence to intelligent solutions. We're not going to stop miners beating policemen or policemen beating miners in picketing fights. They've got to stop it from the inside. And until that is stopped in everyone, there is a movement towards that Armageddon, which no individual can stop outside himself. He can stop it inside, but not outside. So it's our duty to each one of us as an individual to solve the internal problem of the Armageddon in us as individuals. If we can't solve it in the individual, in us, simple proposition, God so loved the world. He gives himself incarnate as his own son, as his own spirit, into the human race and says, love one another as I have loved you. Now, until we can do that, we're moving step by step towards nuclear blast-off. It isn't a matter of whether we like it or not. It's a matter of fact. How much power has an average citizen got against his government in any country in the world? Where would you begin? He's got nothing except a voice of complaint and chanting on the back of the neck. But if he changes himself internally and solves the problem of that Armageddon in himself, well, then he won't be in that position. When it finally occurs, because it must occur, because human beings are not trying to make it not occur. But the few who do see it, they will not be in that position when it occurs. Symbolically in the Bible, you have a number. 144,000 will be saved. That's not many, if you take that number literally. But 144 is 12 times 12, isn't it? 10 means ordinary perfection. 12 means governmental perfection. Now, 12 times 12 means governmental perfection refined, so that even the details are covered. Ordinary perfection is 10, sufficient is 100, 1,000 is plenty. 144,000 means that the impulses inside every individual within the nervous system are so clustered together that in every individual who has that number, there is total self-control and transcendence of the need for a personal Armageddon. Well, you can juggle all night if you wish with your numbers. The symbology is perfectly right. We need ordinal perfection, and we need governmental perfection, and we need it to find details, and that is the meaning of 144,000. It's not 144,000 human individuals or 144,000 nerve endings in your body, but it is that number needed for control of self, so that one does not have this vicious, aggressive, counter-reactive process. Yes.
Presumably, though, that unification is brought about by living out one's days, in the sense that you cannot do it before you could do it. You want self-fulfillment, and therefore the days are no more judgment. Don't they presuppose a preparedness to suffer sufficiently to gain that unity?
Yes, but this is within the power of any individual to prepare to accelerate his development.
So, yes, right.
I often get this statement made, I can't do it before I do it. And it means I don't want to.
But there is a difference between accelerating one's own development and egotistically cutting corners.
Very great difference. Accelerating one's own development is always towards that. Every moment that you say, I am a zone of sentient power, I have an active aspect whereby I initiate, and a passive aspect where I suffer the consequences of my initiation. Every time you say that and mean it and understand it, you accelerate. Every time you forget it, you retard. And you can lose your gains. And there's that horrible, very frightening statement in the Revelation. Let him that is filthy be filthy still. That is, on the day that the whistle blows and they say, missiles have just left Moscow, you have 35 seconds to put your back door over your bed and hide under it. And you might be busy being naughty. So it says, if you are being naughty, then be naughty still. You can't suddenly say, oh my God, if only I'd known I would have reformed 10 seconds ago, I would, honest Lord. We're in a very, very delicate position. And today, more than at any other time in history, the battles of the great heroes in India, in China, in Japan, in the North sagas, they're nothing compared to what we're threatened with today. We're threatened with a permanent blasting of the earth's fruitfulness, the pollution of its rivers, its earth, everything, for thousands of years, so that all life will perish, except for the insects that have dug in deep enough beforehand. The scorpion. It's a very serious moment. And we tend to think it isn't really serious. But we have a little article that says that the nuclear shelters of the royal family are now well assured. There are many caves fitted up in Wales, like factories. There are many more all over the world. For those that are wealthy enough and have enough initiative to have accepted the idea of that Holocaust, that nuclear war, and they've already put their baked beans down below. I know a man, and it's now, I think, about 12 years since I had a cup of tea with him, and I couldn't get in the house without squeezing between the bean cans. True. He asked me to go and see his library. Mama's collection of wonderful books on comparative religion, philosophy, yoga, everything. Open the front door, he could just let me round the door, and there were beans. And down the centre of the hall, enough room for us to go sideways. I said, what about the library? And he said, sorry, it's full of beans. We'll have to wait till we've eaten a few. He's prepared. Now, I know a lot of people that are prepared to shoot him the day there's shortage of beans. True. Because, do you know what he did, that man? He's very, very foolish. He actually went to the local greengrocers and the local grocers and the local everything and ordered everything he needed and said, shh. Don't tell anybody. You know, if you go to the corner shop and tell them your most private secret, it's all over immediately, isn't it? Well, he went and he told everybody in the shops, these beans are for the Armageddon. So where are they going for beans when they're sold out in the shops? To give the beans? That's not what he's studying them for. It's funny because he personally is very thin. If he stays that thin, his beans are going to last him an awful long time. And this is a very real situation, and the nearer it gets to it, the more hysterically amused by it people become. Why can't people take it seriously that we're going to be fried by the million? Do you know why? Fundamentally, we don't believe in death. We don't believe in death. Fundamentally, it's an unassimilable idea. You can have a body and destroy it, but have you destroyed fundamental sentient power? No. And therefore we tend not to take it seriously. But our own development we must take seriously. Now, until we have a reference point, we have nothing whatever to discuss, have we? Right. Now, the least mark we can make is a point, is it not? And we do it first as an idea in our mind. And then I will take it from my mind, push it along my arm, and publish it there. Now, in order to publish it, I had to move my arm through space. And I have a stopwatch. I won't be able to bring it out and wind it up. But I could have pressed it to start it and pressed it to stop it between here and there. And then I would have known how many seconds it took me to carry the idea from my mind along my arm to the plane of the sellotape creature.
Whatever
it is
not, it never comes to be. So is the dot not a dot
before
it's a dot?
Didn't we say we had an idea of a dot in the mind before we put it down here? Right, but the idea that the dot is already there eternally, is it not?
Yes.
It's in the mind before it gets onto the cellophane. There's an answer to that by Plato if you want it. The source of all ideas is the vibrating infinite continuum of sentient power. All the ideas are already eternally there. Yes? Now chaos is simultaneous co-presentation of all of it, including all the hidden orders that could be abstracted from it. Right. Now one of them is a dot. As it happens, it's the most economic mark we can make. It uses the least ink. And being Scottish on my mother's side, I prefer the dot to a line. Because it uses less ink. Right, so I put the dot down there. But it's already there in my consciousness. Nothing can come to be except that which already is. Coming to be is making it manifest. Now, supposing I write the word emit like that and then read it Hebraica. That's time. I emit. I output from the field of consciousness, which is not expressed, a little bit of it called dot. Yes?
Yes.
Time is an emission. I could diagram it like this. Here is a plane in eternity, because eternity contains everything, and there is a little bend, and there is a dot on the end of that bend. And when I look at this way, I've got a dot. But it's really a bend in eternity. Eternity is a field of sentient power. If we bend it, that bend itself can be looked at as a point. We can ignore all this and this and look at that and say there is a point. But it's there before we look at it. It cannot come to be unless it is. Recognize means know it again. Now, in Platonism, you have a simple statement. There is a numeral world, a world of names, and the names are sound structures of form. And they're all co-eternal. But when I utter the word dot, I abstract from an infinity of possibilities. Like Aunt Agatha. Yes? Grandma Gray. and dot. They're terms.
So the only responsibility an individual has is for the idea he admits.
Right, and admit means what?
Right, yes.
To put. And you're back in time, in limit. Aren't you? As soon as you make, transmit, and so on, you have posited out of the universal balance field a particular superstress. Yes? You, John Gerrit, have a superstress pattern, different from Trevor Smith. But you're fundamentally identical in the absolute eternal chaos.
Yes.
There you are not discriminated. Here you are discriminated. And it's your discrimination. Dis means two, doesn't it? And the crim means creation. Discriminate means apart, creating. You have manifested through a series of choices becoming John Gerrit, manifestly. Trevor has manifested becoming Trevor, manifestly, which shows a preference in you for John Gerritness and Trevor for Trevor Smithness. Yes? And the tendency of the egoic self is to affirm its own self is better than other selves. Otherwise it would have no ground to prefer it. And when you said value, you said a word with the V-A-L, which is V-O-L, volition. You said you will value.
Yes.
You will to believe that John Gerrit is better than Trevor Smith.
No, I wouldn't make that evaluation.
No. I'm making it for you. I'm making it for you. That in the place where you are, you have preferred John Gerrit. If I were to say to you, tell me truthfully, if I, Frankenstein, by a little switch of nerves here and there, could Trevorize your brain box, would you be so happy with it?
A bit of a war.
A bit of a war, yes. You prefer you to Trevor in your place. At the same time, you prefer Trevor in his place.
Yes.
I love Trevor in his place. Like I love Peter in his place. I love everybody in their place. When Jesus says, I go to prepare a place for you, he's telling his disciples there, if you understand this game, you can have a unique place where you can be yourself, Johnning or Trevoring or whatever. Make means substantial lock.
Yeah.
That's all it means. And the substance is power. Substance is power. You know that from fundamental physics now, don't you? There is no matter other than energy behaving as matter. The fundamental substance of reality is power. Formally, but not powerfully. You can admit degrees, you can admit formal differences, but power remains power. And that power is sentient. So it's a self-positing power. It posits John there and Trevor there. And it posits that John prefers John there to Trevor there, and prefers Trevor there to there. It prefers everybody else to be where they are elsewhere, while I'm leaving me here. Yes? Preference means that before the fact you essentially make it. To prefer is to do it beforehand,
like the dot.
Now, we wouldn't be individuals unless there were a preference for individuality. Well, God is no fool. And he, the omnipotent omniscient, has made these differences. So they must have a utility to him. Our unique individuality is valuable to God. That's the meaning of the parable of the prodigal son. Naughty boys have more interesting tales than exceptionally good boys. Right? So we are all self-assertors by divine fiat.
Yes, all before one.
So our absolute egotism is a divine command to be so. In order to exhaust the possibility of an investigation. And the word sin is a translation in the English Bible of a Greek word that means missing the mark. The mark for any being is pure individuated self-determination. And when you're purely self-determined, you are not reactive to external stimulus, so that you're wholly, purely you. And if everybody in the universe are wholly, purely themselves, individually, that would enrich the world that God makes. So we have a duty to be individually what we are, uniquely, divinely imposed. We must be our unique self, not our copy self. I don't want to sit up all night studying how to be a second Scargill. I'm quite happy that he's being that there. I don't even want to be a McGregor. I don't want to be anything that you could throw things at. Right, now we're going to examine time. We can make these bends. This represents eternity as a plane of being. Now there's a very old diagram of the human spine, very simple. It goes like that. That's a primitive drawing of the human spine. The Egyptians have a rather more formulated thing, more naturalistic, for the same thing. But in Oriental masonry, you would cut this into 33 segments, and they would correspond with 33 bones in the human spine. Now, in the beginning, that's how many there are, and then some fused together. So you say 7 cervical and 12 thoracic and 5 lumbar and so on. You reduce them, but you start with 33. And that 33 is 3 times 11, isn't it? And the 11 means 1 over 10. It means the individual over an ordinal system. Your body is an ordinal system. Your heart beats, your liver works, we hope, your kidneys work. And over it there is a consciousness, which in the psalm is called My Lord. My Lord that orders me about, and the Lord that orders cosmos about. The Lord said to my Lord. The universal Lord, or principle of order, says to this local being, order, the Lord said to my Lord, sit still till I make your enemies your footstool. All the impulses in you that keep breaking your unity. And they do. You have a physical body reactivity, an emotional reactivity, a time mentational reactivity, conceptual reactivity, volitional interference within the field of consciousness. And it's very difficult to balance them all. And until we are balanced, we haven't consummated our days. Now, we have this drawing of the spine. And if we say, let's put a man's head on the top there. We'll have a pelvis down here. Now, some of the nerves that come out here control sexuality and food appetite and so on. The ones on the larynx control your verbalization capacity. And you have total representation of every stage in the spine inside the head in small. That's like a little universe, and the body is like a middle universe, and the whole cosmos is a big universe. So we call the body itself a mesocosmos, and a microcosmos in your brain, and a megacosmos for the cosmos, and for an infinity of those a megalocosmos. But it's also order within order within order. Now the sexual nerves down here have evolved a long, 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 long time ago, very closely with the food ones, because if we don't eat, we can't breed. And once upon a time, consciousness was down there. And what we call rising through the planes is the elevation of consciousness from this genital area gradually up the spine. As we rise up, we pan out the nerves sideways like this, and put them in the body like this to give orders from each level like that. Now, at the bottom level, we are driven by primordial appetite and the will to survive, eating and sexuality. Yeah? And the consciousness is very low in the spine for those. And each little plexus in the body has a little brain of its own. Just like the solar plexus is a brain, which is developed in the great saurians for controlling the tail and the back legs, 80 feet long being. Now, when you come up to the level of the heart there, you have a feeling of your whole relation with other beings. And when you come up to the larynx, you have a feeling of capacity for verbalizing. Now, this verbalizing is the most important thing there is. Just as it says in the Gospel of John, in the beginning was the Logos, the Word. Without the Word, nothing was made that was made. Now, a word is a sound, is it not? And you know that sound vibrations produce geometrical figures on a plate of glass, the so-called Chladni figures. You know there's an unbreakable relationship between sound and form, and that you can actually shatter the form of a human being. This is done experimentally, electromagnetically. You broadcast a beam radio wave at Peter here, and you can shatter his nervous system. I mean, break it in bits by electromagnetic vibrations. They've killed monkeys with it, so why not Peter? It can't be much more difficult, can it? So we suggest to Peter that he does not sleep on his electric blanket while it's switched on. I mean that. Now, if you don't turn it off, and you know, John, perfectly well, you cannot insulate the field when a current is running along the wire. So when you lie on an electric blanket, you are creating a field outside the windings of the blanket, yes, which is interfering with your nervous distribution in your nervous system. It can make you ill. Yeah? All right, that's just one of the ways of doing it. But with beam radio, you can shatter somebody's brain process and kill them in a matter of seconds by electromagnetic vibrations. It's one of the more sophisticated modern weapons. Well, most of the fellows that do the work are more likely to know where you are than you are to know where they are. So, now this question of rising through the planes, this represents one of the planes. Yeah? And when we come into being, we come down from eternity into the being through the brain and down the spine like that until we finish up in the reproduction center down there. And that's called descending through the plane. Now, when we descend, we insert a certain amount of energy from eternity into the time process. Now, whatever level you think of in meditation is the level from which you gather the energy that you're going to posit in your body. So, if you have universal compassion, you harmonize your own nervous system and cells. And if you hate, you also hate yourself. There's no way whereby you can have an inimical thought, a damaging thought about another being, without producing a corresponding damage in yourself. So, in this Oriental Masonry, we have a 33 level being, and we divide that into three basics: thinking, feeling, willing, and then we subdivide each one 11. And then, to keep it very simple, put it on the hand. You see your hand, little finger, physical body, ring finger, emotion, middle finger, time thinking, index finger, conceptual eternal proposition, thumb, volition, palm, consciousness itself. And then each finger has three, a below, above, and a middle, doesn't it? So you can begin to multiply the symbology. But to keep it simple, you say, I'm going to write I'll put it here like this. And there is the thumb, there is the middle finger, ring finger, little finger, index finger. There's the hand, right? Now the symbology is this. Mercury on the little finger, symbolizing materiality, come mass, come Mercury. The sun on your ring finger for life force, liking and disliking. Saturn on your middle finger for time, Saturn, Kronos, time, time thinking. Jupiter on your index finger for universal concepts. Venus on the thumb for drive, primordial push. And a triangle occurs here in the palm. And we'll put Mars in there. And then we'll put the moon in its three phases on this little finger side of the palm. We've now disposed the so-called seven planets as symbols upon the hand. And we remember these, and they aid us to control our own responses by self-observation within a field of time presentation. So we now put the thing down like this, standing on little finger, ring finger, index and thumb, and the middle finger is like the head of an animal in time. That's a quadruped. We are led by the time stimulus, as by the nose. In the fallen state, in the Revelation it says the number of man and of the beast is the same, 666. Six for thinking, six for feeling, six for willing. And that the number of the beast and the man is the same for the fallen man, the man who behaves like a quadruped. His breath goes down to the ground even as the beast. But the moment man remembers that he originates in eternity, and eternity does not mean a loss of time. Time is serial presentation of the contents of eternity. Eternity is hey trinity, threefold life, power, form, function, timeless. But it breaks into the time as manifestations of deeds based on emotions, based on thinkings, based on purposings. Now all these processes are within every individual, down to the smallest micro virus, the flea. William Blake's drawing of the cell of the flea. The flea also thinks and feels and wills. So there's the sheep. So there's an intellectual. So there's an Einstein. But it's all the same process for all beings. It's called Panchakarma. Fivefold creation, where the five are evolutes of the palm. The fingers grow out of the palm in the embryonic development. Your five senses grow out of the one sense you call common sense, common to the five. Now when you know that, you can examine your own self physically to see what you're doing physically, emotionally to see what your like-dislike is, mentationally to see how you're thinking about time events, conceptually how you're thinking about eternally true control concepts, volitionally what is your intent now, and consciously in the field embracing those five together. Did you say zeal?
Yes.
Well, zeal is an extra energy input into a situation. Yes. Well, that's the center, the triangle in the center there is energy. All energy is triple, that is power, form, function. And it simply spreads out so that under your knuckles you have three sections on each finger, don't you? And the lower part, nearest the palm, corresponds with your belly, the middle part with your chest, and the top part with your head. But it's all energy. So everything we do is energy. And when we know this, we begin to watch inside our own being for responses from all levels. Now to do that, we must become conscious of the meaning of consciousness. What does he mean if I say to you, John, be conscious of your physical body now? And I've switched consciousness from your physicality to whether you like it or not. Well, you're aware of your body already, aren't you? What does it mean to become aware of your like and dislike? We call this the awareness of the aesthetic. I like it, I dislike it. Right? And what does it mean if you decide to think about your position in time as a physical body with feelings of like and dislike?
What it means that you have the opportunity to go into the eternal aim of inertia or finish
it. Uh-huh. And what does it mean if you have a governing concept of eternal validity? Yes?
Yeah?
Like the concept of absolute interpenetration of all beings.
What does it feel like?
Hmm.
Right,
that means fundamentally you are for it and recognize it to be something to do with the persistence of your being.
Yes.
Yeah? And when you feel about consciousness as consciousness, in the reflexive act of consciousness, reflective self-consciousness, what's that like? You don't think about your body or your emotion or your time or your concept or your will, merely the fact of consciousness of consciousness.
Well,
well, it's certainly an opportunity for interplay of everything. Now, you're rising in the plane of being when you move from little finger up to palm through the other fingers and thumb. Four of them are horizontal and the thumb is at right angles to it. Four are really all under passivity law. Physical body is passive to stimuli. Emotional field, passive. Time thinking, passive to time stimuli. Concepts, passive to universal concepts. Volition, passive to the opportunity to change. Consciousness itself is the origin of all of them. And the initiator, the will, is within the field of awareness, isn't it? When we put the doubt there, we did so by an act of volition. But before the volition that put the doubt there, we have the field of awareness, don't we?
What's the critical state to be able to do that simultaneously with focus and buying sense?
Yeah. Now the fall is when you forget to be conscious and you don't notice that you're willing to do something, you don't notice that you've chosen a governing concept, and you go under a time stimulus of an emotion from a body stimulus, and you crash into identification with the body. And if you stay down there, you're equivalent to being a mineral.
Yeah.
Mineral, vegetable, animal, human, superhuman or heroic, angelic. And the space in which these six are is divine. And you can choose whether to go up or down this ladder. This is Jacob's ladder. The human spine is Jacob's ladder. And messages go from the brain down and from the body up. And a messenger is called an angel. The word angel means messenger. So nerve impulses going up and down the spine are called angels rising and descending the Jacob's ladder. If you're outside time, you're in eternity and you have nothing serial to say. Angels inbreak like this in order to say something at that point to be received by this other point. Like there's an inbreak into that human being there. And the point where it comes into the fontanelle there, goes through the skull into the brain, that point is an angel. A message. All the messages come from eternity into time. No, it leaves it to the incarnate consciousness to respond to the angel. Because there must be an agreement. Otherwise, man would be a puppet. Man is free to make a decision whether to believe the angel or not.
So the angel speaks to an existing person.
that an angel is a definite amount of power, form, function, energy, with a definite intent to come from eternity into the time process. An angel is not a fiction. It's a definite amount of power, intelligently formed and actively trying to give you a message so that you can either accept it or reject it.
That's when we say we have an illumination or something, a clarification occurs and you have to see
occasionally. Right. So you might suddenly get a flash of insight for which apparently you have not worked. That's an angelic inbreak.
Well,
you have worked, but that has not made the thing happen. Grace makes it happen. It's a gift. But if you don't work, you may not get the gift. It doesn't mean that you won't, because God can give you a gift even if you don't work. And that's to set at nothing those people that think you can only get good things by working for them. You see, if you think that all the good things you've got are the product of your work, you become conceited. You can say, thank God I'm not as other men. I have worked what I've got. And you ignore grace. The ability to work is already grace. You see, essentially, the whole thing is simple. There is an absolute self which is infinite. If that self does not kill itself, it abides alone. Kill means lock. That means create. So it gets it only its only begotten son is itself locked up. That's the messianic self. The power of the infinite sentient power imposes locking on itself in order to become manifest. As in the Quran it would say, I was a hidden treasure. I desired to manifest myself. Therefore, I created the world. If I don't create, I don't manifest. And the marvelous things I could do are not done if I don't do them. But if I do do them, I am doing them. It is I myself in the doing. But I must not forget that it is I, myself, doing it. Otherwise I fall into thinking something is being done without my I positing it.
Is that comparable?
You can compare anything. You can make it relevant. The whole thing about creativity is this. Nothing is unconnected with everything else. It's up for you to see a connection and make a connection if there isn't one. Because if there isn't one, it's because you've unmade the one that was. In the primordial chaos. Remember, chaos is not disorder. It's an infinity of simultaneously presented orders.
It's all there.
It's all there.
So the seed falling to the ground.
It abides alone. Now that...
Is the seed there, the spirit?
Seed is the spirit.
So the spirit incarnates?
Itself.
Mm-hmm. And when the baby is born, where is the protestation from? Is it from... is it from the protoplasm which has become enlivened with spirit, or is it from spirit? Crying out in pain.
You mustn't be dualistic. Matter is spirit reduced to the least possible initiative.
Yeah.
Yeah? Pure spirit is pure initiative. Matter is inertia. Yeah? But when the spirit posits an inertia, that inertia stands as matter. It's a resistance. There aren't any resistances other than spirit setting itself up as resistant to its own initiative.
So at conception, spirit condenses and then takes from the mother what it requires.
to produce its own substantial body.
Mm-hmm. And there's a dialogue, because the mother may like or dislike the baby. I mean, about 80% of babies are abortion attempts that failed. I'm talking about statistics now. So the mother has an opinion, the baby has an opinion, the father has an opinion, society has an opinion. And the baby's in the middle of those opinions, and they're all fighting.
Now the seed hasn't fallen to the ground, has it?
And yes. It falls at the point of conception. It goes through a fallopian tube. Now, it's not accidental, it's not an idle joke. To get from the ovary to that tube, there's a gap. It's a genuine fall. But the word fall and pawl are the same word. P-A-L-L, pawl, covering. It covers itself. You are essentially a being of sentient power, absolute. Now, if you remain at that level, you are non-manifest. So that you have to get into a body which is appalling. It's a covering. And it wraps up your essential self in a substantial inertia, subject to stimuli from its mother, from the environment, conditions, the conditions in the womb, the agreements or disagreements of mother and father and everybody else. The field of that child is within the field of the total human situation. Yeah? But it is appalled. It is covered by the mere fact of becoming a fertilized entrant being. It seizes the sperm and ovum as they come together. It is the third force that unites sperm and ovum. And that is a real being with the real intent, but it has the intent of the mother, the father, society at large, battling with it. Some of them come in and they look around and they go back immediately.
So in relationship to the persistence of getting involved and incarnating,
yeah,
to an ever greater degree,
yeah, it's all seed falling to the ground. Every time you put an energy into a physical act, even like bending one finger, that's the seed, the spirit, different seed, the, yeah? The D is the door, Dalit. Seed the door. There we are, the plane of eternity, the bend. Yes? It's seed the door there. That's seed, the. Seed means spirit going through the door. If I draw you a little spirit, condensed like this. Yeah? And that little thing there belongs there. And it's come down there, it will fall to the ground, lie down there, and it'll come up like this, won't it? And it will make an oak tree. Yeah? Was the oak tree in the acorn?
Yes.
No. The oak tree was in the field with the acorn. And the acorn is a condensation of the numinal oak tree put into the ground to pick up matter to manifest itself with. The numinal oak is there in eternity. So it's a numinal acorn. Yes.
Well, let me ask the question this way. Can the true individual oak tree begin to grow until man has fulfilled his days? Because until he fulfills his days...
You've disguised that same question as before. You're still making the same statement you made before. I can't do it before I do it. You've disguised the statement. You're saying, I can't do it until I do it. The oak tree is numinal and the acorn is numinal and so is everything else. But in order to get into the earth body, to get the mass inertia to repeat the experiment till you become incarnate, embodied, suddenly convinced that you are you by overcoming the resistance of the material body's dictatorship. Only by overcoming the resistance do you become you. So you've got to get into the earth. Now, it's no good taking a numinal oak up there and pushing that in the earth. It's not economic. The best thing to do is make an acorn, put that in the earth, and then drive through it and become an oak tree. But each oak tree is conditioned by the ground in which the acorn fell. Pardon? No, the power is a catalyst, the acorn is a form. The acorn is an objective form. The catalyst is consciousness itself. Can you see it, no? There is a tendency, which we can call prodigality syndrome, if you like, not to want to do it before we do it. You see, the longer we can stay out from eternity in the time process, the more we suffer pains, miseries, and so on.
The longer we stay out of eternity.
Yes, in time.
Now, why is it that I would have said the longer we stay out of incarnation?
You're incarnate. You don't stay out of incarnation. You're always trying to get into it. I don't see you trying to get into eternity. I see you trying to preserve yourself in time. Everything you do daily, your work and everything about you, is an attempt to preserve you in time. You don't want to get back to eternity yet. Like St. Augustine, Lord, deliver me, but not today.
You see that in me?
Oh, in everybody. Well, you didn't invent that one. It's pretty obvious.
But is there not an intelligence in saying Or is that the dupe? Is that the dupe?
That is the dupe specially appointed by eternity to make sure your prodigality doesn't back out too soon.
That's what I'm saying all along. That
I know what you're saying all along. You're trying to justify remaining in the time process and saying I can't go back to eternity until I go back. I say, of course you can't. But you're making it into a reason why you shouldn't go back. Well, that you should try to go back as quick as you can and rely on the eternal stopping you. Otherwise, you're cooperating with the wicked one, the one that wants to stay out. But its own ends, it's enjoying itself in time. Now, eternity is saying, when you finish messing about, come back and tell me your funny stories. Don't think you're telling me anything, I know it all. But I'd like to hear your version. Can you see how the enrichment of eternity occurs through the idiocy of temporal beings?
Yes.
Remember, idiot means layman, simply Latin for layman. And a layman is a passive being in relation to a simian. So we're thrown out of eternity. Some of the rabbis said we were kicked over the ramparts of heaven because we kept looking over the edge. And wouldn't go down, but couldn't keep away from looking. And God's patience, like Hitler's, ran out and he booted us over the edge. But a very, very illuminated being like Lucifer didn't wait to be kicked. But remember, in order to learn, you have to make mistakes. But you can't make a mistake deliberately. What you do deliberately is not a mistake. So you have to pray to be ignorant and you have to make a mistake. And it's very hard work. It's what Nietzsche called the Umwertung aller Werte. You've got to turn everything over. It's the same as the mental mind. Whatever you thought or been taught to think as a child, forget it. When a baby comes into the world, it has no regard for anybody. Do you know that? It's totally self-willed.
And it doesn't change, does it, very much?
No. Gets a bit bigger in the body. Yes. Now, when it comes in, it's essentially itself. But it can't be any good. It can't do anything with itself unless you first put it in jail. to make you want to get out. That's the meaning of the presence of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. It's all nice, and then say, but don't eat that one. That's so you get focused on what not to do. If you weren't focused, you wouldn't do it. You'd have been lying on your back with Adam now, with fruit falling in your mouth, dreaming away, perfect, and totally ignorant of misery. You'd have no sympathy for the dispossessed, for the pot-bellied, starving Somalian babies. You'd have no sympathy. You wouldn't know about it. So you'd be very deficient. So you got to be offered, but not forced, to accept a temptation. And then when you take it, you fall. And then you suffer. And then you develop sympathy, compassion, intelligence. But that intelligence develops only insofar as your essence as a baby is covered up with civilization's attack upon you to educate you.
Only insofar as it is covered.
Yes, which it is, by society educating you.
Yes.
Education is an incorrect word there. It's indoctrination, isn't it? They cover the essential baby. The baby wants his own way. Mummy, I hate you. You didn't give me an ice cream. Mummy, I love you. You did give me an ice cream. That's baby talk. Now you've got to put the baby to bed, forcibly, when he doesn't want to go. To teach the baby discipline, to make the baby become an individual, which it isn't as a baby. And then you have to get rid of the conditioning that you imposed on the baby to re-become the baby with the full knowledge of the whole cycle. And so you become as a little child again.
That's the second birth.
Second birth. It doesn't do that. Look, there is the plane of eternity, and that is sentient power itself. It simply puts a warp in it like that and goes back. There's no duality there. You posit your object and remember that you posited your object. That's the origin of the letter V. V is just a short form of that process. I posit myself and remember myself as positor. Beginning of a word?
Yes.
It's the beginning of the word word. In the word word, you got two of them, haven't you?
Yes. Yes.
You got two because there are two worlds.
That's
the noumenal one and the phenomenal one. That's phenomenal and that's noumenal. When you train yourself to verbalize that this idea which is in my conscience, I am positing by my interest, and in return, it is I who am positing it. You go back as you come in, and that's your V for development. And all you need then is the zone of activity, the differentiator, and the discriminative process whereby you shut the door or open it to an event. Right? Isn't it terribly simple? In the beginning was the word. Let's translate. In the beginning was the noumenal, phenomenal world. And the phenomena are nothing but the noumena serialized, so there aren't two. We then rotated that fact to divide the outside infinite chaos from the inside to be ordered. Included. And then we vibrate it to discriminate it, and then we categorize and separate the differences disclosed by the letter RD. A rod of measuring, or the reed with which you measure the New Jerusalem. The word word contains the whole process, just like the word logos contains the whole process. Logos is light. That's lambda, gamma, that's OG, macrocosmos, issuance. That's your word logos. It's all there in the word word, in the word word, in the word vort, in memra, in shabda. Whatever word you take for word, you'll find the whole process in every language contains exactly the same information from a slightly different viewpoint. Right? Thank you.